again and welcome to Musings on Golf, where today we're going to hear from Mark Calcavecchia, the winner of the 1989 Open Champion. We've also got some important items to talk about from a global nature, as Rory McIlroy is talking about a tour perhaps similar to the Champions League in football. We also get to relive Rory coming up a little bit short to Tommy Fleetwood in Dubai, and another inspirational win on the PGA Tour with Grayson Murray winning last week. My name is Kelly Elbin. I'm joined by my good friend Bob Bupka. And Bob, inspiration, first 2 weeks on the PGA Tour, great start, great stories.
Yeah, absolutely incredible and well put there, Kelly. First, we had Chris Kirk, and we heard his great story where he had a personal battle with alcohol, left the tour for quite a while, came into recovery, went on to win over on Maui. And then Grayson Murray, a similar story, his own problems, left the tour for a while, and he comes back to win. What a beginning to 2024 on the PGA Tour.
And Bob, I think that the more good storylines that we have about, you know, guys winning events on the PGA Tour, it's good for golf. And I'm happy to hear it. Mark Calcavecchia, who you've known for a long time, is going to be joining us a little bit later. It was fun talking to Calc. He's continuing to play on the PGA Tour Champions. His win at a very warm Troon in 1989 was his breakthrough. And, you know, it meant a lot. It really kind of created his career, if you will.
Yeah, no doubt about that, Kelly. And I think our listeners would be interested to find out. Calc, really an avid bowler. Matter of fact, in the home prior to the one he's living in now, he had his own bowling alley. I've never heard of anybody having their own bowling alley in their home, but that's how much Calc loved it. And we loved Calc being on Musings on Golf. Very down to earth and very sincere, and really one of the great talents ever to play the game of golf.
Yeah, he is. Okay, hey, let's take a quick look back at Tommy Fleetwood's win at the Dubai Invitational. Rory McIlroy three putting from, 2 feet? In the final round, he dunked a couple of balls in the water. Fleetwood with some big-time birdies down the stretch. It meant a lot for Tommy, obviously, to beat his buddy Rory McIlroy, as you hear right now.
It's always very special when you play with one of your friends, one of the best players in the world, challenging yourself against those guys. I think, like I said just before, Rory's been a very, very supportive influence on me. Over the past, since I've known him really, but in particular, since we've been close, and I've watched him do amazing things down the stretch in golf tournaments, and today was my turn. But yeah, being out there with him, somebody you're comfortable with and somebody that you can really, strive to achieve, half of what he's done in his career was great. And that's what we want to do as players, play against the best players in the world and see how your game holds up.
You could tell that came from the heart. A lot of respect for Rory McIlroy and Tommy Fleetwood. Don't forget, certainly in the top 20, maybe even top 10 players currently playing the game. I would not be surprised. I'd like to get your reaction on this. I would not be surprised to see if we see Tommy Fleetwood pick up a major win here in 2024.
Wouldn't surprise me at all. We've all seen him play, and he's got a lot of game and all these Ryder Cup experiences, and he's been close in a number of major championships. Hey, Bob, you know this from a psychological standpoint, having followed top players for years. Whenever you beat, whether it's his buddy or not, and Rory is, when you beat a player like Rory McIlroy down the stretch, my goodness, what does that do for the psychology of a player and the belief, well, hell, if I can beat Rory McIlroy, I can beat anybody.
Yeah, it just frees him up, Kelly, as you well know. If he goes to battle head-to-head with Rory McIlroy in another event going down the stretch, he'll have this in his memory bank. And if it's somebody else, he'll gain the benefits because he'll be able to say, well, I went head-to-head with Rory McIlroy and got the job done. Why can't I do that against opponent XYZ? So that was a big week for Tommy Fleetwood, and I'm happy for him. He's really, really a super nice guy.
Yeah, you root for him, and you root for Rory. And Rory, earlier today, as we record this on Wednesday, January 17th, likened what he's sort of envisioning now of a world tour similar to the Champions League in soccer or football over in Europe, where leagues would feed up to the 60 or 70 top players in the world. Global is the word I keep hearing from Rory, and I understand that. Probably not exactly the word that Jay Monahan might want to be hearing from Rory McIlroy, Bob, who maybe has sort of shifted his thoughts about, the PGA Tour and maybe has a – look, he's a global player, and it has an understanding that at least in his mind, that's where the game needs to go.
Yeah, and there's nobody that could say Rory's plan is wrong.
Right.
We have to come up with some sort of plan. Last year, to be perfectly candid, a disaster in the world of professional golf. Too many offshoots in this direction, that direction. We need some stability, and I'm hoping 2024 will bring stability back to professional golf.
Well, for Grayson Murray, there was a lot of instability for a long time. Alcohol issues. He's had anxiety issues as well, but he started to play better in the fall of 23. He put it all together last week at the Sony. And as you'll hear from him, it wasn't easy down the stretch, but maybe that's what makes it even more satisfying when you win the tough way.
Yeah, it was not easy. It never is easy. If a tee shot on 18 is not a good tee shot for a fader with the wind off the left. And, tug it off the tee in the playoff, and we just had to lay up and didn't hit my best wedge shot. But, obviously I made the putt and was expecting both of them to make birdie, at least one of them. You never know what's going to happen in this game. This is a silly game, and hats off to Ben and hats off to Keegan for a well-played event. And, unfortunately one person has to win, and that's the way it goes in playoffs. But I'm very pleased.
You know, I like that, Kelly. Grayson paying tribute to his fellow competitors. He realizes that either one of them could have made their putts and Murray misses, he'd have been out. But congratulations, Grayson Murray. Job well done winning at Sony.
Yeah, really big win. And we'll talk about the PGA Tour returning to the mainland starting tomorrow at the American Express. But PGA Tour Champions Bob makes its 2024 debut. This week, the Mitsubishi Electric Championship in Hawaii. And good to see those guys. Mr. Bernhard Langer continues his timeless pursuit of yet another Player of the Year trophy. That Champions Tour, though, PGA Tour Champions, continues to be strong. You got to play well to win out there, man, on a regular basis.
Yeah, and I wouldn't be surprised if Stuart Sink doesn't come out on top. He played very well at Sony. And he just seems to be getting better and better. But the elephant in the room certainly has to be Bernhard Langer. What an incredible player. What an incredible person. What an incredible career.
Interesting, starting tomorrow at the event that you knew and I knew and so many knew for so long is the Bob Hope Desert Classic, spread out over 5 days, three different courses. And now it's the American Express. That's changed. What's highly unusual is your defending champion is not going to be there, John Rahm. You do have a very strong field, Scottie Scheffler, Justin Thomas, Jason Day, Tony Finau, among others. But, Bob, not having Rahm there is sort of the first marker of the year to show the impact of LIV Golf.
Certainly, John Rahm, one of the more popular players out in the desert. We know about his success at San Diego, and the American Express people certainly would love to have John Rahm in there. And I get a chuckle when you mention the name Bob Hope, and I had so many opportunities of being with him and interviewing him while he was in the court. And I think one of the best stories that came about as a result of Bob Hope, his wife Dolores. Bob was getting up there. I think he's around 98 at the time. And Dolores said, Bob, we have to get serious. You know, if you should pass, I want to do the right thing. And so I want to know exactly what you would like me to do. And he said, Dolores, that's easy. Just surprise me.
You know, he was one of the great Americans of all time. He's one of the greatest Americans in my eyes. You consider all those trips overseas to lift the morale of the troops, and certainly what he meant, my goodness, to the game of golf, Bob, for so long. I mean, that the Bob Hope Desert Classic, along with Bing Crosby and the Clam Bake, man, for years and years, those were the destinations before we got to the Masters. If you were anything in the world of golf, you had to be playing in those, and to be seen on TV playing in those events, it's big stuff.
Yeah, it absolutely was. Movie celebrities of all kinds, presidents. I mean, Gerald Ford playing there. I mean, it was the event in the desert, and couldn't have had a better host than Mr. Bob Hope himself.
We're going to get to Mark Kalkovecki in just a minute, but just a personal aside, I played a little golf today. I know it's cold everywhere. I know it's cold where you and Janice are in Houston, and it's just cold, and there a lot of people aren't playing golf, but I had an opportunity here to play some golf this morning. I played with a gentleman who's 88 years young, and it just kind of hit me that how great our game is. We hear this about, oh, it's a game of a lifetime and on. And then when you play with somebody who is 88 years old and his golf swing is pretty darn good. Fact of the matter is, I think by the time he got around to the 12th or 13th hole, he was getting a little bit tired, but the format, the shamble format we played, allowed him that he didn't have to hit all the shots. For someone that age, Bob, to be out and social and among other people and enjoying the game, that's part of why we love golf so much.
Absolutely. And you mentioned 88. He's not quite 88, but he has a desire to play the game unlike anybody else I've ever met. His name is Bob Joyce. He's 85 years old. And, you know, normally you call an 85-year-old friend to see how they're doing. I know when I call Bob, when I say to him, how you doing? He say, well, I finished second yesterday, or I won 2 days ago. I mean, he plays more tournaments than you could ever shake a stick at 85 years old. And he had another dear friend of ours down visiting him in Florida, Sonny Rhodes, who's been a 50-plus year friend of mine. And Sonny and Bob played together in a golf tournament. Sonny's in those mid-80s also. And they decided to go to a Doobie Brothers concert that night. And I couldn't wait the next day. I said, how was the Doobie Brothers? And Bob Joyce says, oh, man, they were too loud. We had to leave at the intermission.
Probably needed some earmuffs, didn't they?
Yeah. Playing in golf tournaments, Doobie Brothers, 85 years old, simply amazing.
Sometimes it's just a number. Just keep on going. Really enjoyed talking to Mark Kalkovecki, and not only about winning the Open Championship in 89 at Troon, but also he was pretty honest, I thought, very honest in regards to, you know, the end of the match he had against Colin Montgomery in 91 at Kiawah Island in the Ryder Cup. And it was a meltdown. And fortunately for him, and fortunately for the United States, Bernhard Langer just missed a makeable putt on the last green, and the U.S. prevailed in that Ryder Cup, that war by the shore. But Calc, as you said, you know, a self-made golfer in a lot of ways, born in Nebraska, a different kind of golf swing, but what a talent. And for a long time, he was the top of the heap. He was very much right up there among the best in the game.
He certainly was. And I got a kick out of how much enjoyment he had on coming on Musings on Golf. And when our guests enjoy themselves, that means only the listeners are going to enjoy it even more. Very sincere, very down to earth, very appreciative of the opportunity. And our listeners are going to be very appreciative of the next commercial we run, because they're for William and Harry, and I'm talking about as fine a golf shoe as you could ever put on. They'll last a lifetime. They'll make you look good, feel good, and I guarantee you probably even play good. So let's give a listen right now to William and Harry.
William and Harry has launched a line of stylish waterproof golf shoes, and they are incredibly comfortable. The WH golf shoe is made of deerskin and suede. It has a gel insert, a form-fitting inner lining, and the reinforced hardened soft spikes on the outside of each shoe provide maximum performance. It's time to elevate your game. It's time to go to William and Harry MarkCalcavaGolf.com.
Your most important shot is the one you're about to hit. And whether it's the first drive of the day, a difficult approach from a tight lie, or a bunker shot to save par, you need to know your golf ball will perform exactly the way you need it to. Superior performance on every type of shot. It's why the majority of the world's best players choose the Pro V1 or Pro V1X, and why you should too.
Welcome back to Musings on Golf. Bob, our special guest today, won 13 times on the PGA Tour. And interestingly enough, he was almost a no-show for his biggest victory, the 1989 Open Championship at Royal Troon. He's also a man in whose house I once rolled a couple of strikes. I've got to think he remembers the former much more than the latter. Hey, Mark Calcavecchia, welcome to Musings on Golf. How are you?
Hey, Kelly, good. And Bob, thanks for having me. Those were the good old days when I had the two-lane bowling alley in my house. I sure miss it. I know that.
You know, speaking of good old days, when I heard that we were going to have you as a guest, I was excited because I really have admired your talent to play this game over the years and one of the good guys out there. And I remember, I think we were up in Canada and you were getting a pedicure and I came in, I got the booth next to you and I said, man, this is cool. I'm getting a pedicure next to a professional golfer. I mean, it's, but you got to take care of those feet.
That's right. Yeah. When your feet are killing you, that's just awful. When you're standing on your feet for, 6-7 hours straight and walking 6 or 7 miles, your feet need some TLC also. So yeah, I've always been a big fan of pedicures. That's for sure.
What are you up to these days, Mark?
I've just been playing a decent amount of golf. I'm finally semi-healthy. Everybody says, you need to get back to 100%. Well, those days are long gone, the 100% days. But I feel pretty good. My back that I had operated on a couple years ago feels pretty good, and I had both knees replaced earlier last year. So they feel pretty good, and I've been playing a lot of golf at home and playing pretty well. So my first tournament's going to be the Chubb Classic over in Naples, February 16, 17, 18, I think. And gearing up for that and going to play some more in the Champions Tour this year.
You know, you are a Nebraska guy by birth, but you moved to West Palm Beach, Florida as a teenager. Had you started playing the game before your family moved to Florida?
I did. We had a little 9-hole course just on the edge of town. I grew up in Laurel, Nebraska, in the northeast corner of the state. And my dad and his two buddies bought a 43-acre cornfield right outside of town and decided to make a little 9-hole golf course out of it. And it literally was just a field. They planted trees, but they were just sticks. Now they're full grown, of course. But no bunkers, no irrigation, no trees, no nothing. Just little round greens and tees. And that's where I learned how to hit it. So when I got down to Florida when I was 13, I could hit the ball as good as anybody else down here, but I was clueless out of the bunkers and all the other junk that Florida courses have, water and all that other stuff. So it took me a little while to get used to all that.
We're talking with Mark Calcavecchia, our special guest here on Musings on Golf. And Mark, you decided to go to Florida. What stands out from those years in Gainesville?
Oh, it was, I kind of always say it was probably the greatest 3 years of my life. I had probably more fun than I should have and, spent less time in the classroom than I should have as well. But it was either Florida or Florida State. And the only reason I chose Florida is because it was 2.5 hours closer to home. So that drive to Tallahassee would have got old quick. Gainesville was bad enough, but I love Florida. I'm still a Gator fan, obviously. Great times. Learned a lot golf-wise in those, 2.5 years that I was there. And, played some pretty good golf. And just kind of one of those things that happened that was just kind of time to go. And I turned pro in the January of 81. and you know, off I went.
Yeah, we're so pleased to be joined by the 1989 Open champion, Mark Calcavecchia, here on Musings on Golf. So, Calc, is it true that you almost didn't go to Royal Troon in 89?
Yeah, very true. I didn't know she was a girl at the time because we didn't know, but she was due. My first wife was due on the Sunday of Troon. And, you know, I certainly didn't want to miss the birth of my first child. And that we kind of talked it out, and she thought I should go, my wife at the time, and I was playing good, so I wanted to go, but you know, it was a tough decision, but you know, turned out glad I went. And then also turned out the PGA was 2 weeks later, and she was two weeks late, so she was actually born on the Tuesday of the PGA at Kemper Lakes that year, so I didn't get to play in that one, the Payne one. Yeah, it worked out great, and you know, it's just, and we named her Brittany, you know, after the British Open, Brit. So we call her Brit most of the time, and yeah, that's the story.
Hey, Calc, it felt like Florida over in Troon that year, didn't it? I mean, it was hot, unusually warm.
It was beautiful. They were in a drought. It was low 70s every day. You never even thought about wearing a sweater once the whole week. Probably no more than a 15 mile an hour breeze at any time, 10 to 15, just a nice little breeze, downwind on the front, which it usually is there, you know, and then the back nines, you gotta hold on the back nine when it's into the wind, but the weather was beautiful, and you know, the course was playing fast. It was pretty brown, and, yeah, it was just one of those weeks, you know, where, I knew I was playing well going in, but you don't think about winning a tournament like that on a Thursday or Friday. You just kind of, you know, play on and see how it goes. And got a little help from Wayne Grady down the stretch when he bogeyed the two par threes in the back nine. And the next thing you know, is I'm off and was able to get the win. So, yeah, it's that was an amazing week. Still remember a lot about it.
Oh, I bet. Were you aware going in that there was a four-hole aggregate playoff? Because that was the first time that it had ever been held at the Open Championship.
I had no idea. And right even going to the playoff, I asked the R&A guy. I said, I assume we're going back to 18. He says, no, we're going to one. And I'm like, one? It's the easiest hole on the golf course. It's a 350-yard par four with two little bunkers out there that you got to get unlucky to hit. It's a driver, you know, 50-yard L wedge shot. And I said, that's a strange hole to have a sudden death playoff on. He says, no, we're playing 1, 2, 17, 18. I had absolutely no idea. And I just learned that walking to the first tee when he told me we're playing 1, 2, 17, 18. I said, oh, thank God. You know, I thought, well, that actually relaxed me a little bit because I knew, you know, if I didn't birdie one, somebody was going to, and that was going to be the end of the tournament. But it just relaxed me knowing that I had four holes to get it done.
Yeah, you beat obviously you beat Greg Norman as well as Wayne Grady. What's the feeling like in a playoff like that once you finish regulation play versus, you know, you had to make birdie on 18 in regulation to get into that playoff, I believe. What's
right.
The difference in nerves, et cetera, going into a playoff versus the finish of regulation?
You know, that's a good question. My playoff record isn't great by any stretch. I won one playoff in the Champions Tour, but I think I was 1-4 on the PGA Tour, but I played good in every single playoff. Somebody else just played a little bit better. So that's the thing, is sudden death, like Greg Norman eagled number one at Doral, that one year we were in the four-hole playoff, and another playoff I was in, I played well, and the other guy, you know, just made birdie. I played the hole good, but didn't Billy Mayfair. Beat me at Milwaukee. He chipped in, and you know, but I played well. So that's the thing with playoffs. It's anything can happen, good or bad. But at least when I had four holes, like I said, it kind of relaxed me to the point where, you know, if I don't birdie one, it's not a big deal. You know, I still have three other holes, and two is not a difficult hole. It was like a driver 9-iron, I believe. But, you know, 17, 18 are hard holes. So, you know, it just kind of worked out great in my favor.
Are you going back there this summer when the Open Championship returns?
You know, I was fully planning on going, flying over you know, leaving Friday and getting there Saturday and hanging out for the weekend. But as it turns out, my niece is getting married on the Saturday of the Open up in Springfield, Massachusetts. So I've been ordered by my sister that I better show up at that wedding. So actually, I'm going to fly out of Boston to Edinburgh Sunday night because our senior Open is at Carnoustie the next week.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah, I was kind of looking forward to spending a couple of days at Troon and just taking it all in, but just didn't quite work out.
Mark Calcavecchia joining us on Musings on Golf. Hey, I got to ask you, you've lived down here where I am in South Florida for a long time. So the Honda Classic has kind of been your hometown event for years.
Yeah.
You won it in what? You won it in 87, but the year before you caddied in it for your old buddy, Ken Green. How did that work out? Why were you caddying 1 year? What was going on in 86?
I started in 1986. It was the only year that I've ever started a year with zero PGA Tour status. Mm. I didn't finish in the top 150 the year before. And then in Pensacola, I blew out my knee and tried to play the finals of tour school 2 weeks after having my knee operated on arthroscopically. And it didn't work out, so I didn't have any status. So I thought, well, I'll caddy for him just for the heck of it. And it was kind of fun. And then, of course, later that year, I qualified for the U.S. Open. And you know, I think I finished 14th. And then Ted May gave me an exemption into Hartford, top 10, top 10, top 10. And then the week after that, I won in Abilene, Texas. So it happened pretty fast. But, yeah, the headlines in the paper were in 87, last year's caddy, this year's champ. So I thought that, you know, that'll probably never happen again where a guy caddies in a tournament 1 year and wins it the next. That's a pretty rare feat, that's for sure.
By the way, Ken missed the cut in 86, so I guess you didn't do too good of a job.
Right, no. Well, when he told me he wasn't going to pay me anything, then I just, you know, might have given him a few bad yardage on purpose.
You know, Mark, that leads to my next question, and it's certainly a delight to spend some quality time with you. As I said earlier, I've admired your career for a long, long time. One aspect of professional golf that I don't think is discussed enough, and I'd like your thoughts on that. You know, you go along, let's say you shoot 10 under 1 week, and it's not good enough to win, and then you shoot 12 under and it's not good enough to win. And then maybe you'll shoot an 8 under week and it is good enough to win. It's so difficult. Just because you play well in a professional golf event really has no guarantee that you're going to win.
No, it certainly doesn't. And winning, I've always said this, winning on the PGA Tour is very difficult. And actually winning, anyway, winning on the Champions Tour nowadays is not easy. I mean, you got to play better than everybody else. And, you know, to do it over four straight days on the tour, and most of our tournaments are three in the Champions Tour, but, you know, you can't have any bad stretches. Like you said, you can go out and shoot, you know, like when I won Phoenix in 21 or in 2001 when the weather was bad. I was 28 under, and Rocco was 20 under, and he had third covered by 8 shots, you know? So he thought, well, if it wasn't for Calcavecchia, you know, he would have won by 8, you know, he played phenomenal golf to shoot 20 under and be 8 shots clear of third, but yet he didn't get the win. So that's just another example of sometimes you're just penciled in and sometimes you aren't, I guess.
I understand, Mark, you and Brenda are all about the RV life now and traveling with your dogs. How much do you travel in that RV?
We generally start in April you know, spend a good amount of the summer in it. It's anywhere from 3 to 4 months nonstop. And, you know, you never get tired of it. It truly is home on wheels. This year, we're going to drive it out west. And, you know, driving across Texas certainly isn't any fun, but we have a tournament in Tucson the first week of March, and then we have a week off, so I'm just going to go sit in Phoenix. And Brittany, who I mentioned earlier, I finally became a grandpa a couple months ago, so we've got a little grandson I'm going to go hang out with for a week. and then drive out to Newport Beach and then back to Palm Springs. So it'll be a nice little 1 month trip, or we're counting driving days. You know, it'll be about 6 weeks, and then we're going to go to the Masters all week. We haven't been for 5 or 6 years. So my buddy Eric Cole, who was Rookie of the Year on the PGA Tour, qualified. So we're going to go up there and hang out in the bus and watch him playing the Masters. So it's great times. We love being in the, bus.
All right. Be honest. Who's the better driver, you or Brenda?
Well, it seems how she's only driven it once. And she only made it about 4 miles. It definitely made the, she just, was a little too much for her, a little too big. And, the whole idea is if she actually did drive it, it would be for me to, get some rest, but I'd be more nervous with her driving.
You wouldn't be resting.
Yeah. I wouldn't. Rest would be the furthest thing I'd get. I'd be a nervous wreck. So it's just better off I do all the driving.
Hey, what a treat to be joined by 89 Open champion Mark Calcavecchia here on Musings on Golf. So, Calc, when we put these questions together, Bob and I, in advance, sometimes we lean on others who might know you a little bit better. So I did happen to reach out to Ken Green. He said, please make sure you ask Mark Calcavecchia about a plane flight to Tokyo to play in the Asahi Cup. Can you elaborate a little bit of some of the shenanigans that might have been going on?
Well, most of it was alcohol related, but I do know that you know, we had the entire front of the plane filled with golfers, and somehow after a couple hours after takeoff on a 14-hour flight, we decided we were all going to pile in the very front of it, sit on the floor, and play blackjack. And 12 hours later, we were getting ready to land, and we were still playing. And I think we drank every can of beer and every little bottle of vodka they had on the plane. So it was. I know Ken was involved. Payne Stewart was involved. Curtis Strange was involved in that, and I think Craig Stadler as well. So it was. You know, we took turns being the bank, and it sure made that trip go a lot faster. That's for sure. But that was fun.
Ken also mentioned that you have a bit of a pet peeve in regards to guys waving their putter in the air at some point before the ball goes in. Is that right? Is that a pet peeve?
Not really. I don't know where he came up with that. I think of Gene Sowers. Every time somebody does, you know, every time Gene thinks he leaves a putt short, he puts his putter in the air and into the hole and goes in. So like when Gene does that, it's trouble. It's usually going in, but early calls like that, that sometimes backfires on you too.
Yeah, I think Ken was having a little fun with you. He said something about playing in a group ahead of you a number of years ago, and he did that almost just to kind of tick you off a little bit.
It did. I'll never forget. It was in Milwaukee. He was on the 16th hole, and he's right in front of me, and he got about a 50-footer for eagle, and this thing wasn't halfway to the hole yet. He had his putter up in the air, walking it to the hole. And I was like one or two behind him, and he made that bomb, and it just made me sick to my stomach. I almost puked right there in the fairway. I'm like, damn, how do you know that was going in 25 feet short of the hole? Yeah, you sure did. I remember that. Tuck away. Hey, good old days.
Hey, Mark, I got a kick out of you telling your blackjack story. I was in New Orleans covering that event, and the following week was going to be the Masters. And in the locker room, they had an offer for – any of the players that wanted to fly on a charter from New Orleans to Augusta. And I think it was $200. And I asked if I could get on that. And they put me on. And as soon as we take off, Payne Stewart breaks out the cards. Come on, boys, we're going to have a little blackjack game. And he's going to be the dealer. And about halfway through, when I'm getting nothing but 22s the whole time, I said, what are you doing, Bob? This guy just won $88,000 playing in New Orleans. You got about $88 in your pocket, and you're playing blackjack against him. Boy, did I love Payne, and I think you did too, Mark. He was just a different breed of cat.
Yeah, he sure was. We had a lot of good times. We won both our matches together in the Ryder Cup in 91. Actually, just last month, we had a tournament called the Payne Stewart Invitational at the Floridian. that Mike Flaskey ran, and it was great to catch up with Tracy and Aaron. Again, I hadn't seen him in quite a while, and a lot of great pain stories were told. So, yeah, he was he truly was the life of the party. I mean, if nothing was really going on, Payne would come up with something, and then everybody just had a good time around him.
Yeah, it's been such a void with him having been gone so long. Obviously, devastating for his family, but Mark, for the golf community, not to have had Payne Stewart live a long, full life has really been a big miss for all of us.
Oh, no doubt. Again, his personality, he was just, you just wanted to be around him. He was so fun. He just had an infectious personality where you just enjoyed him. You know, his smile, his laugh, the way he played, the grace of the way he played, the way he dressed, everything about the guy was just was classic, really. And we all think about him quite a bit still. He's missed, that's for sure.
Hey, a couple final questions for me. You mentioned about teaming with him at the Ryder Cup in 91. And obviously from that, people know and saw your struggles at the end of the match against Monty. Do you think about that match at all, Mark? Four up with four to go. And I know it was a very tough experience afterward. Fortunately for Team USA, Mr. Langer missed that putt and all was right with the world. But right. Is that weigh on you in any way?
It doesn't weigh on me, but I do think about it every now and then. And the only thing, the good that I can come out of it was we actually did, it's a team event, and we actually did win the Ryder Cup, and I did get 2.5 points. So yeah, considering the way I was playing going into that, that's probably the hardest I've ever worked a week before a golf tournament. I think 2 weeks before that, I shot a pair of 77s. I think it was in Milwaukee. I'm not sure, which is like shooting a pair of 82s anywhere else. And I was not playing well. So I was kind of in a pain mode. So to win 2.5 points was a little bit of a savior for me. And also, I did hit good shots into 16 and 18. I just hit too much club or was pumped up and just blew it through the wind. So, but yeah, I didn't handle it well afterwards. And, us golfers have a knack, or a lot of us do, of kind of knowing what's going to happen and ahead of time. And I just knew that half a point that I goofed up not getting might cost us the Ryder Cup. And sure enough, it came down to a 6-foot putt from Langer, and he hit a good putt. It just broke a lot more than he thought. And I was down in front of the green. I didn't watch it with all the people, and Payne was right next to me. And he had his arm around me, and I just waited for a groan or a roar, and I heard a roar, and he picked me up and hugged me and said, "We won, we won, we won." And after that, I honestly really don't remember anything. I don't remember going in the ocean in our blue jackets. I don't remember the party that night. I don't even remember flying to San Antonio the next day. I remember getting to San Antonio. And there were about 500 letters in my locker, and I read every one of them, and every one of them was complimentary. Not one person harped on me about losing the last four holes. So that certainly helped me get over, a lot faster than it otherwise might have.
Mark, you got a lot better control over your memory. Doug Sanders, 1970, misses that 3-foot putt at St. Andrews to win the Open Championship. And for years after, I'd say to Doug, "Hey, Doug, you ever think about that putt you missed at St. Andrews?" Doug say, "Heck no." He says, "Sometimes 5 minutes goes by without me thinking about it."
Yeah, right. I know. I've seen that putt on TV 100 times. And yeah, that was too bad. He was certainly one of a kind, that's for sure.
Oh, that's for sure. Hey, so are you, Mark. I know Kelly's going to wrap it up for me, but I can't tell you how much we appreciate you taking some time out. It's good to see you getting healthier again. Yeah. And I got a feeling you still got some good golf left in you. Hope to see it come to the forefront on the Champions Tour.
Yeah, thanks, Bob. I've been playing pretty good at home, so I'm kind of excited about getting going in February. Looking forward to the challenge, as always.
Hey, Calc, final question. And we ask this of a lot of our guests. How about a dream foursome of three other players and yourself, whether they're still with us or deceased? Who would round out your dream foursome?
I think I'd have to go with Jack Nicklaus, Arnold Palmer, and Tiger Woods would be my you can't get much better than those three. And, you know, I get that question all the time. Who was your favorite guy to play with? And I always say Tiger Woods, because odds are if you're playing with Tiger Woods, you're in the last group on Sunday. So, yeah, he was my favorite guy to play with. So I'm gonna throw him in my dream foursome along with Jack and Arnie as well.
Well, Calc, this was a dream interview. Thank you so much for your time. I hope our paths crossed at some point. And thanks for joining us on Musings on Golf.
Hey, thanks,
Bob. Anytime. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Just like you, I want to look good and perform at my best on the golf course. And that's exactly why I wear the new WH golf shoes from William & Harry. I love these golf shoes. They're made of deerskin and suede with a soft gel insert. And the reinforced hardened soft spikes increase stability and balance. And they are so incredibly comfortable. I invite you to head on over to williamandharry.com to check out the new WH golf shoe. Look your best and play your best with William & Harry. Certainly thank Mark Calcavecchia. I've gotten to know him a little bit. Very popular guy down here in South Florida where he's lived for a long time. And good to see Mark back and healthier and ready to start playing on Champions Tour.
Yeah, I'm glad for Mark. And, you know, physically, he's had some drawbacks, but sounded to me like well on the way to recovery. And he gets feeling well. He'll be playing well, and wouldn't surprise me. Mark Calcavecchia back in that winner's circle before too long.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all. We thank Mark Calcavecchia. Next week, the wee Welshman, Ian Woosnam, Woozy, joining us. Had a nice talk with Woozy earlier this week, and you're really going to enjoy hearing from him. He's got a lot of thoughts, a lot of stories about a VW camper traveling around and eating beans and bacon, Bob, and before he could even and living out of a parking lot for his early years. Sometimes we got to start somewhere, and for him, it was not exactly the Ritz, was it?
No, but as Luzio's always said to me, listen, Bob, it's not where you start, it's where you finish.
For my good friend Bob Bupka, we're finished for the day. Thanks for listening. Kelly Elbin signing off. Musings on Golf.